Hi everyone, and welcome to Project Play. I'm using a new device today. Can you all hear me? Just if your camera's on, give a thumbs up if you can hear me, because I don't know if you can hear me right now. Oh, awesome. Okay. So welcome everybody. So nice to see you all here tonight. Welcome Brachle, welcome Ahuva, welcome Ayala. I think that's it for our cameras. Welcome Batsheva. And if everyone else can put their cameras on, we would love to see you. Hi Mary, welcome. And hello, Daphna. Okay, so nice to see you all tonight. I would like to, welcome Rivka. I would like to start by saying Tehillim as a zechus for Liel Dina Bas Ephraim. Le'ilui Nishmas, for everyone to say it together, please. Shir Hama'alos, the David, Lule Adonai, Shahaya Lanu, Yomar Na Yisrael. Lule Adonai, Shahaya Lanu, Bekom Alinu Adam. Azai Chayim Bela'unu, Bacharos Apam Banu. Azai hamayim shitafunu, nachla avar al nafshenu. Azai avar al nafshenu, hamayim hazedunim. Baruch Adonai shalo nisananu, taref lashinehem. Nafshenu kitzipar nimlata, mipach yokshim. Hapach nishbar va'anachnu nimlatnu. Ezrinu b'shem Adonai, osei shemayim va'aretz. Thank you so much. So for anyone who's new here, you can sign up for Project Light notifications by sending an email or iMessage to teensfindthelight@gmail.com, spelled exactly how it sounds, or you can text or WhatsApp 216-230-7626. Okay, I think that's it for our announcements. No raffles for tonight, right? No raffles for tonight. So I would like to welcome tonight here with us, we have Rabbi Aryeh Friedner. Rabbi Friedner, we are so excited to have you here tonight. Thank you so much for being here. Rabbi Friedner is the founder of Torah Institute Beyond Canvas and the Hasbodas Challenge and the Passionate Judaism blog. So, Rabbi Friedner, thank you so much for being here with us tonight. I'm going to co-host you, and you can. Thank you, Daphna. And we are so looking forward to hearing from you tonight.
Good. Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, great. So thank you all who have put this together, and the young ladies who have joined this group over since its inception. It's an incredible thing that you've done to really build a group of passionate people who want to connect and learn more and grow together. It's a beautiful thing. And thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it. It's exciting to speak to the group. So a little bit about myself. I live in Cleveland. I'm right now in my pandemic basement office. This is not a real black velvet background. I'm in my, it used to be an extra guest bedroom, and I moved down here during the pandemic, right about when this project was starting. I grew up in New Jersey. I was born in Philadelphia. And I went to a conservative Schechter type school. And then I went to, that was in elementary and middle school. For high school, I went to a modern Orthodox co-ed school. And then right about the time that I was graduating high school, I was enrolled to go to George Washington University. And one of my rabbis convinced me that I should do this thing called go to yeshiva. So I went to yeshiva for a year. 1 year turned into 2 years, and then I got married, and I stayed for a third year and a fourth year, and then eventually we came back to America and moved to Cleveland after living in Israel for a few years, because we wanted to replace ourselves. My wife and I both appreciated the people who helped us go to Eretz Yisrael and understand what it meant to be deeply inspired about Torah and about Hashem. And we thought that if we go back to America, we could help more people do similar things and connect to Hashem. If anyone messages me questions privately, it might be hard for me to read them while I'm speaking. So perhaps I could suggest that if you share any questions to Project Light as a host, then maybe at various intervals, the host can interject and ask some questions kind of publicly, and we can discuss them in a forum if you feel like there's ones that are easy for you to ask. Otherwise, if there are private questions, I might have to save them until later. Otherwise, I'll be a little distracted going back and forth. So I hope I get to some topics if people ask me any of them specifically. I'm sorry if I don't get to anything in the middle of our discussion, but hopefully we'll have time at the end as well. So we came back to Cleveland, or we came back to America, and we moved to Cleveland to run NCSY. So my wife and I built NCSY chapter. We built it up. It already existed before us. We took over and worked on it for about 11 years. And 2 years ago, I transitioned on from NCSY to do other creative educational projects, and mostly virtually. This is pre-pandemic. I felt that it was an important way to find students from across the country that maybe were like in between niches and standing on fences and not really a part of other communities, that we could use technology to connect other people. And then the pandemic hit, and then it was really necessary. So the programs that I've been a part of have all been about finding students who are motivated on their own to go out of their way to learn more, which is kind of like this audience. So I'm happy to speak with you guys. So I'll start with a story that happened a little over 3 years ago. It was actually 3 years ago exactly to the eighth night of Hanukkah. So we're talking a couple of weeks ago. Eighth night of Hanukkah, 3 years ago, my family decided, we do a lot of things with our kids. I think we take them out to like fun places, like Chol HaMoed trips and Sundays. We do as much as we can. It's not easy to always do different things. And 1 year we decided, let's leave Cleveland and not do anything like specifically incredible and exciting, but just go to a different city, change of scenery. We rented a hotel room, or maybe like two attached hotel rooms in Pittsburgh. We decided that Pittsburgh was far enough that our kids would feel like it's some like big road trip, but close enough that it wasn't that big of a deal. So we got in the car and we drove to Pittsburgh, and I don't recall. We may have done some like fun activity in the afternoon. We probably did something fun. And then we went to the pizza store, which eventually opened another pizza store in Cleveland. We went to Milky Way, which now we have Milky Way in Cleveland also. And we had amazing, amazing food. And then it was almost time to like go back and rest for the night. But we had a little bit of time in between. So we started walking down that main street in Pittsburgh. If you've ever been there, Murray Avenue, I forget what the name of the street where there is. It's like the main street where Milky Way is. And there's other random stores. And we're walking up this hill, and we saw there was a used bookstore, and our kids love reading. Thank God. Our kids really enjoy to read, fun things, comic books, whatever. So we walk into this used bookstore and we begin to look around. We decide we'll buy a few books. That'll be kind of like, maybe this is strange, you can tell me, but my kids' idea of an activity sometimes is just going to the library and like picking out books. So going to a used bookstore and picking out books is like a fun activity. So we're walking around, and I vaguely remember the feel, like the bookshelves were very narrow. You know, Pittsburgh is a very tight place. It's a lot of hills. So the buildings themselves are not really that wide. And we're winding around, and there's like a loft area, like a second, a third floor or whatever. And I'm kind of not paying so much attention. I had my phone on me, and my wife is doing the hard work of really looking into what books would be appropriate. And then I saw my wife walking towards me, and she had her phone to her ear, and she had a look on her face that I'll never forget, that you kind of imagine the face that when you see it, you know something happened. And someone's talking on the other line, and she's just listening, almost covering her mouth, and you know something bad happened. And I'm looking at her, and I'm seeing something, and I'm just waiting to be told what's going on. And it's bad. And tears start coming down her face. And she walks out of the bookstore. And now I'm there with my kids and trying to hold them back and kind of keep everything calm before we figure out what exactly just happened. And eventually my wife gets off the phone, and I walk outside to her, and I said, what happened? And she said, I don't even remember the exact words. I don't think I'll ever recall. Neither one of us will ever recall the exact words, because the emotion of the moment was so tremendous. But she said, my parents' house burnt down. The house burnt down. It's gone. The house is gone. it was hard to imagine that that was true. I almost wanted to challenge, like, what do you mean the house burned down? Like, how could it be that the house burned down? That doesn't make any sense. It was the eighth night of Hanukkah. And so my in-laws had used these plastic ready-to-light Hanukkah candles, which, public service announcement, you are not allowed to use them. It is literally pikuach nefesh. If you use the ready-to-light glasses, it has to be glass. It cannot be plastic. We've been trying to tell bookstores to make sure they don't sell them. When we see people on Hanukkah, we tell them not to buy them. You cannot use the plastic ones. But my in-laws used the plastic ones on this night. And they lit the candles and they went upstairs and the fire alarm went off. And by the time they went downstairs, the whole living room was on fire. And it was literally a miracle, thank God, that my family got out of the house. It was three people in the house. They got out and we have pictures of them looking over the house, burning down and smoke coming up. But we had no idea what was going on. We didn't know if people were safe. Their whole lives are in the house, right? Imagine everything you have in your house, everything, every belonging. They had been at that house since I've known the whole family for over, I think, 20 years at that house. And they were at that house for a long time, even before that. It was very, very, very scary. It was very scary. And so we got our kids in the car and we went back to the hotel and we told them what happened. And we had to deal with this emotional balance of their house just burnt down. They're homeless. They don't have anywhere to go right now. They're possessionless. Their whole lives just burnt down and melted in front of them. But also it's Hanukkah. But also, thank God they got out. Thank God they got out. And they were all safe. So on the eighth night of Hanukkah, in our hotel room, we took one Hanukkah candle. We put it in the middle of a bowl and we filled the bowl with water and I put like a little stand inside the bowl and I put one candle on the stand surrounded with water because we were like, we don't want anything to do with fire right now. And it was one of the most difficult brachas that I've ever had to make. It was me and my wife and all of my kids and just trying to say the bracha, we all broke down crying. That I'm thanking Hashem for the opportunity to light a fire, the same kind of fire that just burnt my in-laws' house down. And I made the bracha, and I had in mind that the miracle of Hanukkah for us that night was that at least they were saved. So that was a very difficult night for all of us. And it's had a traumatic impact on many of the people in the family in different ways. For weeks and months, even years after, like 1 year after, we have books like children's books. We had a Hanukkah book, and it's one of those books where you open it up and it's like, first night of Hanukkah, this happened, and the second night of Hanukkah, this happened. And for a while, when I got to the seventh night of Hanukkah, and when I would turn the page, it would be the eighth night. We couldn't open it. We couldn't turn to the eighth night of Hanukkah because it was too painful to just tap into what happened. And I wasn't even there. So my in-laws and my sister-in-law, who's now in Eretz Yisrael, learning, even more difficult for them. So I share this story just to open up this concept of pain that other people go through. I'm sure we all have stories about people that we know or perhaps ourselves that have gone through difficult situations. And my in-laws were actually at my house over Hanukkah and they had a Sudas Hoda where they told the story again and they told about all the miracles that happened that night. That was only a few weeks ago. And then last week on Sunday, my wife told me while my daughter was out at a friend's house that there was a reunion over the weekend with girls at a certain camp, the same camp that my daughter goes to. And my wife had to tell me that one of the families driving home from the reunion got hit by a car. I don't know if people heard about what happened last week, but there was a young girl in high school who because the world is still broken. And since the world is broken, people are still broken. And because people are broken, they make bad decisions and they get on the road when they shouldn't get on the road. We lost a holy sister of the Jewish people from the East Coast. The mother is, I think, still in the hospital. And I knew that I had to talk to my daughter about what happened when she came home. So when my daughter finally got home later that day, she went straight to her room. She was crying. And I went upstairs. I'm not going to pretend like I knew what to do or that I know what to do, how to help someone in this kind of situation deal with their pain. So I can tell you what I did. Not complicated. I went over to her and I gave her a hug and I squeezed. And I didn't let go for a little while. That was it. That was all that I did. And I didn't know if it helped. You can tell me later if it helped. But that was all that I could think of doing. But as we were approaching this conversation that we were going to have tonight, I was thinking, you know, this is an important conversation that we need to have. What to do when we know people that are going through difficult situations, how we could help them. Or what to do in general with the fact that we know people that are going through pain. So this is not a conversation about how I might be able to help alleviate your pain. That's not what we're going to talk about. If anyone is going through their own pain, so then it's better to do that privately, one-on-one. But what we are going to talk about is what you might be able to do if you know someone in pain, what you can do, not just for them, but in general, even what to do with yourself. And I'm not sure how long this talk will be. I think maybe the host can message me a reminder of how long these sessions are supposed to be normally, but whatever the regular allotted time is, maybe we'll go shorter because I'm not sure that I really have a lot to say. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a trauma therapist. I don't even think I'm the most emotionally sensitive and aware person that knows how to do these things, but I do know that we have to talk about it. And so I want to share some ideas that I have, some things that I've thought about, some things that I think are important to share and within Torah context, so that we can try to do these things and to start thinking about these things. And we definitely have to start thinking in this way. We have to start thinking about this way. I see that it's until 10:30. That's what I recall. Let me know if you can, if there is a particular interval that you think makes sense to stop, if you have questions, right? So like tell me in advance and I'll kind of wind down in between now and 10:30. I don't care if we do it a couple of times here and there or time at the end. So just let me know and I'll follow your lead. Okay. So the title of this class formally is I'm Here For You. And this was the natural organic feeling that I was confused. I was confused. I didn't know what to do. But all of my kids, we were in Pittsburgh, and it's not really that much closer to New Jersey where my in-laws live or lived. But my kids were like, are we going? Are we gonna go right now? Like, are we gonna drive there and be with them? And my wife and I almost packed all of our stuff up from the hotel room and got back in the car and just drove through the night to New Jersey. And we had no idea what we would do. We had no idea like what the plan would be, but somehow we knew, and our kids knew even quicker than we did, that there was something right about that decision, about that thought. There was something right about saying, just I'm here with you, to actually be with someone when they're going with pain. That was what my kids wanted to do. I think that's the answer. And really, there's not really much more to talk about. Anything else that we talk about is just going to be how to understand what that means and how to do that, because that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. It's just being with people. In Tehillim, David HaMelech wrote, speaking in the words of Hashem, he said, Yikra'eni ve'enehu, call out to me and I'll answer you. Imo anochi b'tzara. Imo anochi b'tzara. Hashem says to us, I'm with you in your pain. David HaMelech said, David HaMelech, who had a very troubled life, a lot of very scary things and traumatic things happened to him. He wanted us to know through his words and tefillin that Hashem is saying to us, Imo anochi b'tzara, I'm with you in your pain. And if Hashem is with us when we're in pain, then we know that the godly way to act is to be with other people in their pain, just to be with them. Hashem doesn't say, I'm going to answer your pain. I'm going to provide you answers. And we know he doesn't always, or maybe even most of the time. We know that we're going through struggles. We don't necessarily know why they're happening. But Hashem says, I am with you, though. I am with you. We actually know psychologically that we can do this. There's the tool that we have is called empathy. Empathy means that when someone else is going through a particular emotion, that there is a capacity that humans have to feel that emotion, even though they're not actually going through the same thing that someone else is going through. And I tried looking up a name for this disorder. There's probably a number of names for it, but we'll call it, for now, we'll call it excessive empathy disorder. There's actually a clinical problem that very, very rare, unique people have it. It's a very rare thing. That people can not know the difference between their emotions and someone else's emotions. That literally somebody could walk by you and be like really stressed about their day, and you see them and you become completely stressed, and they aren't sure if they're actually stressed or if they're just picking up on their emotions. And there are people that don't know who they are because their happiness and their sadness and their confusion and their pain and their enjoyment of life are all based off the people around them. It's unbelievable. And if Hashem treats us with empathy and there are people that have this disorder that they can't draw a line between themselves and other people, we know that it exists in the world. We know that we can do it. We can treat other people with empathy. It's hard to do. It's very hard to do, but it's possible. And we have to work on it. We have to cultivate it. So the question is, what I want to ask and try to bring some answers to, is how can we do it? How can we do it? So I have a few possible answers, and I hope these will be helpful, because I'm actually not naturally empathic. I've had a very difficult time with understanding and connecting to the emotions of other people. And therefore, I've thought about it a lot. And so I hope some of the things that I thought of will help others. Number one is create time to be in touch with your own emotions when things happen. When I was younger, I'm not sure if this is like a unique experience or not, because we only see the world through our own childhood, right? But I remember when I was younger, I went to a large amount of funerals that were suicides. I don't remember being at a funeral when I was a young child where the person passed away naturally. I remember being at all these suicides. And I couldn't figure out how to feel. I couldn't figure out how to be sad for the situation. It was too hard for me. It was too distant for me. But when I would watch sad movies, I could watch a movie and cry, right? Something would happen in a movie and it would hit me and I would cry. And so I said, well, I can relate to like fake pain, but not real pain. When I was in yeshiva, one of the rabbis in the yeshiva was sick, and he eventually passed away. And I remember going to his classes. I remember being very inspired by his words. I didn't have any personal relationship with him. But something happened when he passed away. Someone came to speak about him one morning. And I remember that I just wanted to cry. And I took my talis and I threw my talis over my head. And I sat there at the desk. And while everybody's speech was over and people went to breakfast, I sat there and I just cried to myself. And I just let myself cry for a few minutes. And I realized at that moment that if we kind of protect ourselves with a talis, right? If we create our own space, and we try to put ourselves in a situation where we don't care what other people think or maybe we're literally in a physical place where nobody can see us, and we just let ourselves relax and think about what happened, we can arouse the feeling of pain within ourselves when other people are going through pain. We can do it. And I think one of those tools that we need to be able to do is create time and space and do it purposefully. If there are people in our lives that we see are going through difficult situations, don't wait for the emotion to overcome you. Create time, make time, go be alone, think about what they're going through. Try to see if you can tap into that place. Because once you tap into that place, then you can help them. When I ran a bus of public school students on trips to Israel for a few years, and it was a very daunting experience to guide these students. Many of them, one of them told me after one of the trips, she said until she went to Israel, she didn't know that Israel and Judaism had anything to do with each other. Like, some of these students had no clue about Judaism. And so one day on the bus, we found out that there was a terrorist attack. And there were a couple of Jewish people in, I think in France, that were murdered. And we had to tell everybody because their parents were going to be scared, right? My kids are in Israel. There was a terrorist attack in France. Well, maybe my kids are not going to be safe. So we had to communicate this eventually. But I realized, how do I just tell them? How do I get them to understand that this was something big for us, even though we don't know who these people were? And so I sat there on the bus and I thought about it. And I started to cry at that time too, just with the burden of responsibility to help people understand what it meant when something bad was happening. Later that night, when we gathered in a big circle to do the announcements for the night before people went to their rooms to go to sleep, I quieted everyone down. And in a much slower, much more monotonous tone, I explained to everyone that something happened in France that day. And there were, sadly, a couple of our brothers and sisters that were killed. And because we did it slowly in our own space at a particular time where nothing else was going on, I saw that the students around me all began to cry. Something that happens from time to time, and maybe we wouldn't think about it in the regular course of life, but because we took time to tap into it, we were able to understand. We need to try to do this. Because when we learn how to emote, how to connect to our own emotions, even if it's not our own pain, then we can be there with somebody, right? Then we can say, I'm with you. I'm here for you. So that's number one. Number two is try to make it relatable. It's like a funny thing to say. Make pain relatable. How could you make pain relatable? So pain is overwhelming when you're going through it. Pain can be many times over more overwhelming if it's on a larger scale. The Holocaust to me is like something that's so hard to connect to. How can I connect to 6 million people? More than that, it was frustrating for me that I would learn about the Holocaust and think about the Holocaust and not be saddened. How could you not be saddened? But it's just too big. But if you go to Auschwitz and you look on the wall in one of the rooms, you'll see little drawings done by 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds. And you start to think that drawing, this is one of the last drawings that little kid did. Could have been my child. Could have been my cousin. Could have been my brother or sister. If we can see something in one particular situation, a face, something real, it can help us understand. So last year, or over this year, a lot of things happen every year. we know something happened in Meron, that there was a stampede. Many people got injured. Many people passed away. And while that was going on, we had it on the radio in my house while we were bathing our kids and walking around. We had it on because we needed to know what happened. And I couldn't compartmentalize. I needed my kids to know that when something bad was happening to the Jewish people, I can't focus on dinner time right now. And then as we found out what happened, it was very, very difficult. And I remember a few weeks later, an article came out with names and faces. And it was too much to bear. But I told myself, I need to open up the article. I need to look at a couple of names. I need to read a little bit of the descriptions because I have to connect to this pain. I have to connect to it. Because if I can connect to it, then I can be with other people when they're going through their pain. And so sometimes pain can be too big, but we have to try to figure out how can I connect to it in a way where I can see one story, one name, one face. These are not easy things to do. I'm sharing these things because I think that the Jewish people deserve to see themselves as big people, as big in the neshamas that can do a lot in this world. And if any of these things are too difficult for us, we don't have to do all of them. We don't have to do any of them right away. But start thinking about this. Just want to pause for a moment because a lot of questions coming in, and I want to try to uphold that if we can try to make sure to save these questions, that we can try to maybe if there are any of these questions that I can answer, I don't know that I can answer them. I haven't been able to read all of them, and I see some of them are very heartfelt and very deep. I'll do my best to follow up and try to answer anything that we can't get to. So I apologize that that there's a lot of real questions that we want to get to, and I think we could probably talk for a long time afterwards and go through all of these. But I want to try to keep it focused and not get too nuanced, and maybe get onto some topics that might be too difficult to talk about. And by the way, I apologize if we already did that. If we already went over the line and touched upon things that are difficult for us, I apologize. I hope Hashem forgives me. I'm talking about these things because I think we need to think this way. The Jewish people need to think this way and try to connect to each other. Practical tip. Ask other people that have gone through pain but aren't in pain now. A student of mine was going through something recently and they reached out to me. Tremendous amount of pain. And it wasn't something that I had ever been through. And I saw that they were in pain. I understood, but I needed to find someone. And I actually knew someone, but I didn't have a relationship with them. I reached out to this other person and I said, you know, we don't know each other very well, but I've seen that you've gone through this thing and now you're on the other side. I have a student who's going through it and they're asking me for help. Please tell me how I can help them. Please tell me how. And they gave me some good advice. And the truth is, most of the advice that they gave me was just nothing that you can do. There's nothing that you can do. Just tell them that you're there with them. I'm here with you. That's it. But the fact that they told me that I went through this trauma, I went through this tragedy, and the people who came to me and said, I'm here with you, they helped uplift my spirits. That gave me the confidence that it works, that it really works. It really does. And so that was really helpful for me just to know from people as an anchor. I went through it and it's true. So sometimes we can, if we're not confident that we know how to deal with the situation, we can, you know, if we know someone else that has been through it, they can be a lifeline for us as well. Next thing we can do is don't overthink too much. Don't do too much. I heard one time that when you go to a shiva house and you have to say Hamokom Yenachem Eschem Besoch Shar Avilat Zion V'Yerushalayim, that Hashem should comfort and console you amongst the mourners of the gates of Jerusalem. I heard one time that we say, Hamokom Yenachem Eschem, that Hashem should console you. And we're not even telling them, but we're reminding us that God often, or maybe always, is the only one that can console someone really going through pain. We can't do it. We can't do it. We can't fix people's problems. We can't explain to them why things are okay. What we can do is be with them. And so we say, Hamokom Yenachem Eschem, Hashem will console you. Not to say, don't worry, Hashem will console you, but so that we're saying, look, I know that Hashem is the only one who can console you, and therefore all I'm doing is I'm being here. So don't overthink it, because we can't do very much anyway. Hashem will do his best for sure. And we can be there. Yaakov in last week's parsha says to his children, he gathers them together and he says, I'm going to tell you the end, when Mashiach is going to come, how the whole thing, the whole world will come to its final place. And he says, Hey Osfu, gather together and I'll tell you. And the Mefarshim explain that the answer was taken away from him and he didn't reveal a specific clear answer that we could see about when Mashiach will come. But he did hint to it by saying, Hey Osfu, gather together. That gathering together, people being with people, being with you, being with someone else, that brings a personal Yeshua. That can bring someone's redemption. Okay. The last note on this nuance of how we can be with people in their pain is to anticipate pain. Anticipate pain. Doesn't mean that we should, God forbid, look around and think that bad things are going to happen. Chas v'shalom, we should only look around. We should assume that Hashem at any moment is going to bring Mashiach and there will be no pain. However, anticipating pain means a couple of things. Number one, being sensitive enough to know, and I make this mistake often, and I'll share one example. Be sensitive enough to know when you're sharing things that are positive, that for other people might not be so positive. I'm in a Q&A group on WhatsApp with one of my rebbes, and many years ago, a friend of mine got engaged, and I shared a picture of his engagement, him and the kala, and I shared it on the WhatsApp group just for Q&A. And I like cutely said, are you allowed to wish a mazel tov to this person if whatever? And I asked it in a question. And my Rebbe called me and he gave me very, very strong mussar. He said, how do you know that people aren't in that group, that they're not engaged yet, that they're looking for their shidduch? How could you share a picture like that? And I realize I made a huge mistake, and I try as hard as I can. I make this mistake, I'm sure, all the time. But anticipate that sometimes the way that you talk and the way that you act and the things that you share might bring pain to other people. And again, I do it a lot. I may have done it tonight already. But to consider it. That's number one. And number two is the Shlah HaKadosh says, I heard this idea from Rav Meilach Biederman, that the word in Hebrew for a save, one of the words for saving someone is pokad, that Hashem remembers and he brings his salvation. Pokad, pei kuf dalid. And pei kuf dalid are the letters before tzadi, ayin, and resh. Sadi, that was wrong. Resh and hey. Pokad comes before tsara. Tsara means a difficulty. The letters in Hebrew before tsara are pokad, which means before the struggle and the difficulty comes, there's already a salvation. We know this concept in Judaism, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings to us the refuah before the makkah. The way to heal something already exists before the pain comes. So what does that mean for us? if we know that being with other people makes them better, makes them feel better because we're with them, to anticipate pain sometimes means that we can be the refuah before the makkah. If we can have more relationships with the people in our circles, just outside of our circles. I'm not saying look for the people who maybe are in pain. I'm saying in general, have more relationships. Be more kind. Put yourself in more situations that chas v'shalom, if somebody should go through a pain, it wouldn't be so strange for you to call them or text them or talk to them privately because you're close with them. Think about people that are in your surroundings and you've noticed them, but you have never really reached out to them. Do something. Because the refuah comes before the makkah and you being with them helps. So be with them now. Be with everybody now. Have more relationships, love more people, be more connected. So I want to share just two more quick ideas. I'd like to stop now to see if we have any questions to address. But I feel strongly I want to share just two other small ideas, and then we'll see if we have time for them. Rav Moshe Weinberger shares a story from the Eish Kodesh that imagine that there was a son who was in a prison cell and his father was working day in and day out to get him out. He was doing litigation and talking to the courts and trying to get his son out of jail. He didn't deserve to be there. And once a month, they granted the father permission to come into the prison and to meet with his son once a month. They opened up the jail cell. The father would come in. What would you do during that moment, that monthly moment? The Eish Kodesh says, are you going to go over litigation? You're going to talk about your strategy, your exit strategy of how you're going to get yourself out of prison when you're there person to person. The Eish Kodesh says, you're going to give your father a hug. You're going to hug your father. And so the prison cell that we're in is a prison cell of so many difficult things going on around us. And it's so hard to feel. It's so hard to feel. There's too many things going on around us that are painful. But once in a while, our heart will open and we have the opportunity to feel pain. When the gate opens and our Father in Shemayim walks into our heart, we're experiencing an emotion. Just hug Hashem. Just hug HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The emotions that you experience trying to connect to others, trying to understand the pain of the world, it's not just about how you can help them, but it's about how you can connect to Hashem through your emotion that you're going through now. So Rav Tzadok writes that when we have triggers, that we feel pained about something, we're stressed and bothered about something, Rav Tzadok says it is literally a message from Hashem that he wants you to pick up a sefer of Tehillim and daven to him. Or to pick up a sitter, or to go to shul, or to speak to Hashem in your own words, to daven. Hashem wants you to connect to him. And so he opens up your heart and he makes you feel something uncomfortable. Daven to him. That's why we feel it. I met with one of my rebbeim in Cleveland one time. And as I was walking out of his office, I saw on his desk were rocks, like 8 to 10 rocks. And all these different rocks had words on them that I was moving too quickly to read them all, but they said things like pain, love, unity, health, struggle. And underneath those rocks were little stacks of notes with names of people in the community that my Rav has a connection with. And I saw that my Rav meets with people and he writes their names down and he daven's for them. I heard in the name of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz like Rav Tzedek says, when we feel uncomfortable, Hashem wants us to daven. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz said that when we are experiencing pain and difficulty and we ask Hashem for something, Hashem answers us. And so if we experience pain from other people because we're trying to connect and understand their pain, how much more so will Hashem answer us? Don't let the pain of others go by without writing their name down and thinking about what they're going through and then putting them in your tefillos. We can help them. We can help them through our relationship with Hashem. Hashem wants us to be bothered by those things going on. Don't feel guilty that you're not the one who is in that situation. Realize that Hashem wanted you to be bothered by it because he wants you to daven also, because we're all connected. If speaking doesn't work, if davening doesn't work, you can write it down. Sometimes I write these things down because I don't know what the words are. And then after a couple of sentences, I can put the pen down because the words start rushing out. Find your way to speak to Hashem. And lastly, don't be afraid to be angry at Hashem. Don't be fooled by your anger to think that it's something bad. Don't be afraid of your own anger, that Hashem could create a world with so much negativity. One time, a student, really a neighbor, sometimes neighbor seems like it's a lesser connection than a student, but sometimes you have neighbors that their closeness to you is way, way, way more than anything else. A neighbor of mine who was also in the age of students loved being involved in programming that we did in NCSY, but always there socially and connecting to other people and having fun. Nothing ever too deep. And one time there was something bad that happened. And she came over at my house and she asked me, and she said, "Why does God do this? Why does God let this happen?" And she was so angry. She said, "I'm so angry at God that he could let this happen. I'm so angry." And she was upset that she was angry. And I said, "Do you realize what you're saying right now? I've known you for years. We've never had a conversation about God. Never. You're telling me that you're angry at God and you're confused and upset. How could you be angry at God? You know what I hear? I hear that you believe in him and that it bothers you that he could build a world that isn't perfect. That means you have a relationship with him. I didn't know that about you. That's an incredible thing. Anger subsides. But if we have anger, it's okay. It's okay. It's reasonable. It's reasonable. But don't run away because of that." I realized that my own son, I have a rambunctious 2-year-old, that we notice this thing about him, and I don't know if it happens with other kids, but we notice it about him in particular, that if you do something to him that gets him angry, like you take away the marker or you take away like the ice cream cone, he throws this huge fit. He gets really, really, really mad. He starts screaming and tantruming. And so let's say, you know, you put him on the floor and you let him deal with his tantrum. And then other people in the family come and they try to console him. "I'll pick you up. Come over here." His name is Noam, which means pleasant. Noam always runs to the person that got him mad. He doesn't run away like, "Oh, they got me mad. Now I need to go to somebody else." He ignores everybody else and he goes right into the arms of the person that made him mad. As if he's saying, why are we fighting? I'm angry at you because you took something away from me, but I don't want to be angry at you. And so he runs into the person's arms and he screams and he tantrums while he doesn't let you go. And that's what we have to do with our emotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even when it's anger. Sometimes, especially when it's anger. So there's a lot to do, but it's really very simple. Just be close to other people, love other people, try to be a part of other people's lives, all the other questions are details and specific applications of these principles. Connect to Hashem. Connect to other people. Don't explain. Don't fix. Don't mend. Just be. And so my tefillah, and I'll end and maybe we can get a couple questions. My tefillah is that the Eish Kodesh, the Bizetz and the Rebbe, who shared that story about the son in the prison cell. In Parshas Chayisara, in the middle of the Holocaust, he shared with the people in the Warsaw Ghetto. He said, isn't it strange that Sarah, who was a prophetess, she was a Navi, a Naviya. She spoke to Hashem. She had 100% Amunah. And we learn in Parshas Chayisara that Sarah died because she couldn't handle the news that her son Yitzchak was bound at Akedas Yitzchak, he was bound at Har HaMoriah, and he was almost killed. He wasn't even killed. There are Midrashim that maybe say, on a basic level, he wasn't killed. On most levels, he wasn't killed. And they're coming home. And so Sora hears what happened, and she dies out of the deep emotion that maybe something happened. So the Eish Kodesh just asks, like, what's going on? Sara Imenu, who had so much Emunah and Hashem, nothing even happened. He has a couple of answers. But his last answer was almost too hard to read. He said, Sara Imenu could have survived. Sara Imenu was fine. It was hard for her. It was very difficult and very painful. But she understood that Hashem has bigger plans and she could have survived. But Sara Imenu let herself become so enwrapped in the pain of what was going on to the extent that she died because she wanted to die. Because she wanted Hashem to see, stop pushing us. Stop causing pain, Hashem. Because there's such a pain that you could bring to the world that's unbearable. And we need it to end. And so Sara Imenu had a tefillah with her own life. And so the parsha is called Chaye Sara. She gave up her life to teach Hashem a lesson that Hashem, you can't do this to us anymore. And so we have to do the best that we can do to help other people. But ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not the first one to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's time for it to end. There should be no more pain. We're not good enough at this. We don't know how to do it. We're trying our best. Please guide us so that we should understand how to deal with our own pain, how to deal with the pain of others. Kodesh Baruch Hu, help us realize that you're also in pain. Imo Anochi Betzara, we know that you're with us in this pain. Help us realize, those of us in pain, those of us who know people in pain, help us all understand that you are with us, even when we're in pain somehow. But ultimately, take us out and bring us personal, complete salvation. Pain-free, beautiful world.
Thank you so much. Are we moving on to questions now?
Yeah, I'm happy with that. If you have a way to maybe share any questions that you got that you feel like are crowd worthy, can you do that? If not, I can try to sift through some that I've gotten, but it might take me a little more time to make sure I know which ones are good to share. Do you have any?
Great. So I'm going to look. Meanwhile, if anyone has any questions, you could just put them in the chat box. Make sure you're sending directly to me. My name in the chat box would be Pot of Light. So let me just find.
Someone asked, how can I help my friend in pain when I'm going through pain? And I think maybe we touched upon that sometimes that's the best tool that you can use, right? To not be in your pain at the moment, but to know that pain is real and deep. And to try for some moments that you can to be there with someone else in their pain. Again, you don't have to know the answers. You don't have to be convinced that everything is going to be okay. But when we're going through pain, we don't want any answers anyway. I had a little nothing situation that happened to me today that bothered me. And I called my wife and I told her what was going on. And she started giving me answers. And she knew and I knew I didn't want any answers. I just wanted her to say, like, oh, that's so annoying, right? We all need validation that what we're going through is real. And the stronger the emotion, the more validation that we need. So sometimes the pain that we go through gives us an opportunity to help others in their pain. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Someone asked, she has a friend who has a rare mental illness that she wants to be there for her, but she doesn't know how to, and she doesn't feel comfortable being around her.
My best answer is I don't know. I don't know. If the best thing that we could have accomplished is trying to inspire people to start asking these questions to the right people, then maybe that will be a help for people. I don't know. It's really hard. All these things are really hard. We underestimate the impact we can make by doing just a little bit. If being there with someone a lot is too painful, don't do nothing. Don't think that you have to do a lot to make a big impact. There's a lady in Cleveland that's going through pain, and she texts me all the time. She texts me all the time, requests and questions and things, and she wants to know if we can make her challah for Shabbos. Sometimes I ignore her texts. Sometimes I answer her. Once in a while, I visit her. If I would say I can't keep up with her needs, I'm going to find a way to ignore her. What am I accomplishing? And I can tell you, because she's told me very clearly many times, the little bit that I do, she's so appreciative of. Do a little bit. There's a man in Cleveland that has cerebral palsy, and he's stuck in a wheelchair. I've never seen him pick up his head from leaning on his shoulder. I've never heard him speak. I don't know what he can do physically, but I know he's there. And so whenever I see him being pushed in his wheelchair to shul and I'm in the street, I try to go over to him and I say, good Shabbos, with a smile, like I would to anybody else. Because it could be that one good Shabbos that he's getting maybe lifts him up in a significant way. We have to do what we can.
Somebody asked, how do we balance try to feel in people's pain, but at the same time, like having a full life of simcha and like living?
So when we try to connect to Tisha B'Av, there's an idea that the Gemara says, in other, we increase our simcha, right? Purim. And then in Av, we lessen our simcha to become sad. But there's a well-known concept that that's not really what the Gemara is telling us, that we should be happy in one, sad in the other. The Gemara says that we should be mimatin b'simcha. Not lower our sadness, mimatin b'simcha, but we should be mimatin. We should lower our energy level, lower our emotional state. Mematin b'simcha. But with staying in some kind of an inner state of connection to the realness and the happiness that we're supposed to have. We have Purim and we have Yom Kippur, right? We have Rosh Hashanah and we have Sukkot. There are times on the Jewish calendar that we're supposed to be scared and take very seriously, and when we daven, to be bowed over and to blow the shofar and deal with the realness of the world. And there are holidays where we're supposed to dance. We're never supposed to be completely happy. There's no Beis HaMikdash. Hashem isn't here the way that Hashem wants to be here. But we're also never supposed to be completely sad. Right? And we have to work on that balance. There are times of the year, there are times of the day, and it is unhealthy to be too happy, and it is unhealthy to be too sad. And we have to try to become aware and more in tune with how much happiness for us is not healthy, how much sadness for us is not healthy. We have to learn who we are personally.
Bunch more here. Let me just read through them quickly.
After a friend goes through a tragedy, how do you know if what you're going to say to them will be comforting or insensitive? It's a really, really good question. Again, I don't know. I try to err on the side of less. Hamoka Minachim. Hashem is the one who consoles. The only way that we console is with real connection, right? Often my brain wants me to say, oh, one time this happened, and so I understand what you're going through. You don't understand. You don't understand. I don't understand. Nobody can understand what anyone else is going through. If I can share one of my favorite stories about Rishayla, someone came to Rishayla, and Rishayla was known for being such an Ohev Yisrael. He loved people so much. And someone came to Rishayla, and he said, Rebbe, I don't know who to go to. I don't know who to talk to. I want to end my life. And so Rishayla said to him, wow. I see that you thought this through. I can't believe it. Well, how are you going to do it? And the man was shocked that the Rebbe took such an approach in the conversation with him. And he said, and the Rebbe said to him, he jumped to it. The Rebbe Shaila said to him, maybe you were going to do it in this way. He said, jump off a bridge. And the guy said, yeah, I thought about that. And the Rebbe said, no, but you can't. That's not a good way, because if you get hurt and you don't die, it's going to be very painful. That's not good. And the Rebbe started racking his brain for all the methods that this guy could go through to do such an awful thing. And every time he brought up an idea, he knocked it down. And he said, that's not good either. And Reb Shaila said to him, you know what? Come back to me in a week. Let me think about this and I'll help you. So the man left his office. And Reb Shaila saw that he never came back. He was in the community. He saw him on Shabbos. He shook his hand. And the man never had to express that pain again. Because the man saw that Reb Shaila understood that what he was going through was real pain. It was real pain. And that's all he needed. All we need to do with people. We don't have to do it like Reb Shaila. Let's not try to be like Reb Shaila. I don't know how anybody could pull off such a conversation. But all we have to do with people is say, I saw you went through something. I'm really sorry. I don't know if I can help you, but I'm here with you. Err on the side of less. It will be helpful. By the way, I'm happy to stay and talk more. I don't know as far as Project Light what you'd like to do. Obviously, people want to leave, but I'm happy to continue to talk and.
One or two more questions. Do you have anything specific you would like, or should I read a question for that?
No, go for it.
Okay. How can you feel for a friend when her pain seems so petty compared to yours?
Hi. I want to try to say something, and I haven't thought about these words in a sentence yet. So I hope it comes out right. But I heard one time Rabbi Fran said that we are as big as the things that make us angry. That if little things make you angry, you might be a little person. But if you would never get angry unless something tremendous happened, then you're tremendous. And if nothing would ever get you angry, no matter how big it is, it means that your greatness is beyond measure. I think perhaps we could say the opposite about feeling the pain of others. I think perhaps the bigger we are, the smaller the tragedies of others find their way to impact us. Like a little paper cut in the wrong place that doesn't look like it's such a big deal, but it drives you crazy. It's not a good parallel. How could you compare? If someone thinks what they're going through is small, perhaps Hashem sometimes gives us in life little pains that really drive us crazy so that we can imagine maybe what they're going through to me looks small, but to them it's fully encompassing. If we can find a way in our heart to open it up and to try to see how what they're going through for them is significant, I think that will make us big people. I think we have to try.
I think the rest are repeats. I'm just going to see if there's anything else. Maybe we'll end with one. How should I approach my friend who's going through pain to tell her that I'm there for her?
Can you say it again?
How can I approach my friend who's going through pain and tell her that I'm there for her?
I think that's the way. Right? I think... You know, in a lot of these situations, going through trying to put yourself right, we talked about creating time for yourself, creating a space for yourself, trying to connect to that pain. A part of what that means is to kind of, it's scary to say these words, try to imagine what it would be like for you. God forbid, what if you were in that situation? If you can do that well, you don't have to dwell on it for too long. It's a horrible, horrible thought. And I would never say to do it. I would never say to do it. We have to create bracha by thinking about good things and being positive and having an ayin tov and bringing out the greatness of the world. But there's also an idea of no siva o chavero, of holding the pain of others. And how can we hold the pain of someone else if we don't know what it's like? So for a moment to think, what if that were me? What if that were my family? And sometimes you can get that one moment where you're like, oh, too far. Okay. That's really awful. And then from that place, and then maybe you can draw from other experiences that you have had, right? Some people have a bracha that they haven't been through particular tragedies. When they look at other people, they've been through big things and they haven't been through big things that were so terrible. Baruch Hashem, it should stay that way. No one should go through anything terrible. But just imagine what it would feel like if someone else reached out to you and did nothing besides say, I'm here for you. Right? We know that feels good. We know that feels good. Don't overcomplicate it. It helps. It helps. Someone asked me, is it bad to make yourself sad often? I think the dangerous answer is yes. The problem is that sadness is not an easy thing to control. Sadness can be overwhelming. Sadness is sometimes seemingly deserved. Sometimes it's chemical. I got a concussion a few years ago. And sometimes if you have a bad concussion, like I had, one of the symptoms of concussions is depression. And for a few weeks, I had some kind of real legitimate chemical-based depression. And I knew it because I didn't have it before and I didn't have it after, but I was in a prison cell of sadness. And I knew that it wasn't real because it was a symptom of a concussion. It wasn't like I had had it for years. And so I couldn't separate my life from my brain telling me what I should be feeling. Is it a real thing or is it not feeling? I knew it wasn't real because I was told this might be a symptom. And then I experienced it and I felt deep, penetrating, burdensome, million pounds of weight sadness. And I realized sometimes people have that. And what I learned is that you can't tell people sometimes to not be sad, because sadness is not something that's easy to overcome. But I can tell you, having experienced that small example and having some of my own experience with sadness as well, that there are ways to climb out of sadness. And there are people that you can talk to for help. Sometimes it's a friend, sometimes it's a parent, sometimes it's someone that you don't know, sometimes it's a therapist, sometimes it's medicine. But I can tell you, having been on both sides of it, it's worth the fight. Other people care about you more than you possibly can understand. People are ready and have already forgiven you more than you can possibly understand for what you think is this like self-negating, I'm doing something wrong by feeling this way. People care about you. People are there for you. Start reaching out sooner than later to people that you feel like you can trust and talk to, and they can help find a way to get out of it. And I can tell you that one of my students in Eretz Yisrael was dealing with this. And he asked me, how come during Tachnun, if you read the words of Tachnun in Davening, very depressing words, we're admitting to Hashem, we make all these mistakes, we're so sorry, we're horrible people, and he's prone to depression. And he asked me, how could we have such a thing in our davening? How could we have such a thing to be a daily reminder of how terrible we are? It was putting him into a downward spiral. So I said to him, Hashem gave me an unbelievable answer. I said to him, but you don't see it in the rest of davening, do you? It's only there, right? He said, yeah. And I said, so what it teaches you is that there's a specific place and purpose in our lives to experience sadness during that moment and nothing else. That's the goal. The goal is to be at a place where we can be sad and be lonely and be depressed and be forlorn and be in pain, to experience it completely and fully, and then be able to say, Kodesh Baruch Hu, I'm putting it on you now and I'm moving forward. That's the goal. And we can get there.
Hey, is that it for the questions? I mean, you probably have a lot more. I just don't know how much time you have.
I'm comfortable taking a few more if you feel like there are any that are relevant and that are important. I don't see how many people are here. So if you think that it's important, I can try to do a little more.
I'm going to try to look back. Most of them were repeats. I think we could wrap up here.
Okay.
But yeah, thank you so much for being here with us tonight, and we appreciate your time and what you gave of yourself to come here with us tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity to put these thoughts together. You know what I'm going to actually do? Can I share with everybody? Is there like a share all?
Yeah, go to chat and then instead of two,
here, someone. Everyone, I see it. I'm just going to share my email here. You can also WhatsApp me. Did that work? Do you guys see that? No? Why did that say direct message? Oh, I just sent it to one random person. Sorry, random person, whoever you are. I didn't mean that was not meant to be just for you. Okay, everyone, there. You see that?
Got it.
Okay, so feel free to email me or try not to text me. But if you reach out on my phone, just WhatsApp me. It's easier for me to stay organized that way. If I didn't get to your question or if there's anything else you wanted to reach out about, I'll try my best to have time. And I'll tell you now that I don't know that I've any good answers or advice for anybody, but I can at least try to listen. Thank you for coming. And Akash Baruch Hu should bless everyone to, in the short term, be able to do the right things regarding pain, and in the long term, but hopefully also immediately, for this to never, never, never be a problem again. Akash Baruch Hu should take all the pain away from the world tomorrow morning, tonight, right now.
Thank you so much.
Have a good night.